You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Hello, you're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm Mason Dixon, joined by Corey the Bayou Benders, and this is Habs Nightly, your hub for Habs content. So we're back for our Thursday episode. It is Wednesday night, November 3rd. The Habs finally won another game. So we have some good shit to talk about today. But first, how are you, buddy? It's been a few days since we've last chatted.
Dude, I'm doing good. We're going to see the new My Hero movie tomorrow. And then the next day, I'm going to Oktoberfest, which we brought all the kegs. We brought 130 kegs today to swap out the, I think, 93 empty kegs we had. So we did that in 2 days, last Friday and Saturday. We burned through 93 kegs. So we sent that out today, and I can't wait to drink some fresh German beer come Friday. But, dude, doing pretty good.
That's good to hear. Nice to know that you're back at work. Obviously, we talked about it last episode, I believe. I got to know, like, what's working Oktoberfest like, though? That's got to be busy for a guy like you.
Actually, I don't have to work it because it has volunteers now. So all I have to do is we just bring the kegs a couple of days before, and then I go personally because the guy Jack that runs the Deutsches Haus down here gives us free tickets every year. So you get free tickets to get in, and then you just pay you buy the beer. But a lot of times, if they just see that you're the company that they're using the draft truck for, they end up just giving you free pints. So I might spend, you know, $7 to $14, and I might drink like 3 liters of beer and get free food. You know, which is what happened two Fridays ago. And it was amazing. I literally spent $7 and all of it was just tips. I just tipped them for giving me free beer while I was just checking on making sure everything was pouring right. And I went to go buy a beer and they'd be like, no, don't worry about it. It's on the house. Thank y'all. I was like, fuck yeah, let's do this.
Well, I got to say, as a broke fucking college student, that sounds like heaven to me.
Oh, yeah, dude. My friends were like, you think you could get me one? I'm like, dude, I'm not about to lose this fucking privilege on y'all. I'm sorry. But I'll give you a couple dollars.
Yeah, no, I just got something dangerous. So our Jack Doyle Athletic Center, it's got a gym. It's also, for any listeners from the Ottawa region, you might know Algonquin College, the Algonquin Thunder. They've rebranded the team. It's now the Algonquin Wolves. Nice. So they've got this fucking $1 million facility called, and then there's the gym, and then there's the Wolves Den. And I knew they had food, but I never really checked it out. And I go in there with one of my buddies today. It's like fucking gorgeous. Like they've got, like, they bring food to you. It's like this sick little, like, it's cool. They got like a bowling alley in there, and I knew they had a golf simulator. What I didn't know, and this is why it's dangerous, is they've got a bar in-house.
Oh, Lord.
That sells $7 pints. Mm. And my God, it's my bank account about to suffer.
Oh shit.
Right. And you can get it while you're golfing on the golf simulator.
Oh, yeah. So I'm happy you brought that up, because like one of the places, there's two of them down here that we have kegs at. Do y'all have like virtual golf places like that are bars that have like all the walls are just like screens, and it's just all like little tee areas?
Yeah, that's what a virtual golf simulator is.
Perfect. Well, yeah, stupid. Well, yeah, dude, we have two of them down here, and I actually just went to one last Friday to clean the lines at. And there's always like a bunch of fucking college kids because we sell, they do like pint nights and stuff like that. Or they'll do like pitchers. I think like you can get like a pitcher of fucking natty ice or like some natural light for like, I don't know, like $10, dude.
There's a bar across the road from College Square. It's like a 5-minute walk.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bar. It's like a restaurant. Restaurant and bar.
Yeah, yeah.
It's called Pop and Grill. Yeah, and they've got Monday to Wednesday is $6 pint of Stella. So we're always fucking there on Monday night because it's the cheapest, fucking getting our pints of Stella in and then going to class on Tuesday.
Nice. Big Stella guy.
Big Stella guy. Love, yeah, my import beer.
That's down here, the company I work at, we are the distributor of Stella. So I have like dude, actually, I don't anymore. In my wreck, when a dude hit me from behind, I had about 30 Stella glasses, like the tulip ones, in the back. And when I got hit, I just heard glass crunching, dude, and like glass was like flying towards the fucking front of the car. It's like, oh, my cups.
Do you know how depressing that is to me?
Don't feel bad. We have boxes. We probably have over like 1,000 cups. When I come up there, I'll give you like a bunch of them.
I don't know. Have I talked about my collection on this show yet?
No, what? You collect glasses?
Every bar I go to.
You just take one home?
I take a glass, yeah.
Jesus.
And I've got to say, like, I think I came here and I had 4 cups. And I've run out of room on my shelf now. So there's some on my desk right now looking at me. I can see a Rickard's Red staring me in the eye right now.
You sound like my buddy Matt. We call him the Salt Shaker Bandit because when we were younger, every fucking restaurant we went to, a bar, if there was a salt shaker, he would just pocket it, and his room was just covered in fucking salt shakers everywhere.
It's funny. I don't know, I just like it's
klepto.
Like everywhere I go, I try to get a different glass, but I've got like I've got like 4 Belgian Moons now because I like Belgian Moon. But I am, you know, I'm going to remember. I'm going to be like, I took that from that bar and mm-hmm. did this and that. I don't know. I just think it's
it's actually pretty cool down here. I mean, you can do that, but there's a bunch of bars down here that it's like the glass. If you just buy a drink and like, I think for $2, you can just take it, you know, cause I guess.
But that's not as cool.
Yeah. It's not as cool as just fucking pocketing a glass.
Yeah, no.
Oh shit. Well, anyway, we got some exciting news, you know. We had a win. We had a win the other day, and the boys played like really, really good. And I was just a bit upset thinking like Cole Caulfield gets sent down, which is, you know, you said that would probably be the best thing for him. And the commentators said the same thing, but it was like the game after Caulfield leaves, we show a bit of momentum. And I was like, fuck, like he should have been a part of this. But it's good to see the boys, you know, playing like a united group again. I mean, even Sherratt, you know, who's been just getting teed off on fucking Twitter, played an absolute fucking great game.
Well, yeah, I don't think I said it would be the best thing for him. I just think it's better than rotting on the third line.
Yeah.
In terms of Caulfield, he's finally gonna have some like skilled players, at least skilled in the NHL, right? Like Jesse Ylönen, drafted in 2018, second rounder. Like he's a good prospect. A lot of Canadiens fans have forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
Should be pushing for at least on the team next year. Like expect Jesse Ylönen to make his mark very soon. I believe he's also on a line with Ryan Poehling. So.
Nice.
That's some skill up there. They're going to get shit done.
Also, we had Michael Pezzetta and Bazil get a come up, and they had a pretty tremendous game as well.
Yeah, and I'll get to that in a second. I do just want to cover, in terms of Caulfield, because I don't think we did our best talking about it last time. But for those of you who know Jack Hahn on Twitter, former AHL scout, former member of the Montreal Canadiens, like, I don't know, he was there in some coaching capacity.
Right.
Intelligent hockey mind. Was talking about, you know, if you haven't followed Jack Hahn on Twitter, like, even if you don't have Twitter, look up his, like, he breaks down the game, I think, better than anyone I've ever seen do it. He's going to have a job in hockey someday. He's going to be a general manager in the NHL. I'm totally convinced he's a fucking hockey genius. moving on, sorry. Asked him about Caulfield going down and what he thought the AHL would do, because as he worked in the AHL, he was a former AHL associate coach. Like, he said, do you think it would help him at all? And he said it was a waste of time. So I think as most Habs fans identified, Caulfield would have been fine in the NHL if he was playing with skilled players on the top line. But, you know, I do think, and, you know, I'm not an NHL associate coach, but it is my personal opinion that I'd rather him play 20 minutes a night on the top line, the AHL, than 11 minutes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but I just thought it was interesting. And, you know, a former AHL guy saying that it's a waste of time. You should be in the NHL. But moving on, because, you know, the departure of Caulfield did make way for, you know, Belzile, we've heard about, but Michael Pezzetta especially had a great start in the AHL, 7 points in 9 games. I don't know, just, you know, a really gritty guy, great story. Kind of Desharnais-esque, for those of you who remember his story to the NHL. Started in the East Coast Hockey League, worked his way up, 6th round draft pick, really grinded and made his mark. And, you know, he earned this. Say what you want. I even put out a tweet. I said, say what you want. You can be mad that Caulfield's down, but you got to be happy for this guy because he totally embraced the moment. And to top it all off, the guy's got a fucking killer flow coming off the back of his helmet. That lettuce is gorgeous. Had it blowing in the wind on his solo lap. And honestly, I thought he played a great game too.
He only clocked 8. We'll round it up to 9 minutes, but was very impactful. I mean,
only 9, sorry.
He was 8. Well, it was 8 minutes and 45 seconds.
And see, it felt like he played 14 minutes.
And every time he was on the ice and they had a chance, like if they were in, you know, a scoring position and he was on the ice, they would, like, people were getting loud. He was able to get 5 hits. He was just like, you see something like that in that short of time, like, just the word buzzing. Like, he was electric out there that night.
Go ahead. There were multiple opportunities that the Habs started based off a play from Michael Pezzetta. Belzile also had a strong game. I can't remember. They were lining up with a myriad of players but, you know, Lekkinen and Armia definitely helped them. But there was one play in particular that was Montreal lost the puck in the offensive zone. It was a rush by Pezzetta and Belzile. Belzile and Lekkinen, or whoever was on the ice with them, left the ice. Pezzetta stayed on, broke up a play in center ice, and the puck went back in. He chased it down. I don't remember if you remember where the play I'm talking about. I think it was late in the second. And, you know, on the forecheck, got behind the neck, pinned the guy against the boards, fought for the puck against two of them, won the puck, got the puck out, and then got off the ice. But Montreal had offensive zone possession for about 1.5 minutes after that. And that was all started off a nothing play that Michael Pezzetta turned into something just by hard work and grit. And he did that every single time he was on the ice. I thought he gave it his all. And I love what Mike Johnson pointed out. Like you said, finished the night with 5 hits. But didn't do more than he had to, right? Like, he finished the checks that he could finish, but he didn't have any chance of getting a stupid roughing penalty. He didn't.
Yeah, he didn't go out of his way to do it. If it was to secure the puck back or you know, put a stop, he did it. Like, I love that. I mean, if you just look at his stats, like zero giveaways, you know, no takeaways, but he was able to just come out and lock in a strong performance without, you know, putting us at risk.
Exactly. No. And I'm not saying he's a world beater or he's a star player. He's going to be an impact guy in the Montreal Canadiens, but Michael Pezzetta has my vote for a fourth line roster spot next game.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of reminded me of Jake Evans in the middle of Byron and Lehkonen last year. Just every shift, it was just explosive energy, not giving up on the play, you know, and in turn it ended in something, you know, strong for us. But I was thinking about that all night. I was just like, he's got this energy, like, you know, obviously he's out there to prove something, but he's not letting his energy get like knock over his poise into making like a slip up. Like he might have been one of the best players on that team last night simply because he understood the job he needed to do and did it to like a fucking T, like not a crumb is left on this plate.
Yeah, I think he played well. I think Jake Evans also played a great game. I thought the whole team played well. Nick Suzuki really came out. That was a game we love to see from Nick Suzuki. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of game.
Beautiful passing.
Regardless of the 3 points, take the 3 points out of the equation. If Nick Suzuki just played that game and got nothing, he played a very good game. I love when he's taking guys on, stick handling in the offensive. That's what he needs to do to be successful. You know, a lot of times he was given a few passes that I think other more skilled players would have buried, mm-hmm. but they were going to Lehkonen or Galli is a volume shooter. We know this, right?
Like yeah.
And so they weren't buried, but he played well. I would say he was probably our third best skater on the ice last night. And that's only because of two, you know, very exceptional games by two very exceptional players. I think you know who one of them is. He got a shutout. We'll talk about him after. But first, I want to give some of the limelight to Josh Anderson because that is one of the best hockey games I've ever seen Josh Anderson play.
He had a couple like really beautiful, like I think he had like two beautiful passes last night. I was like, dude, this guy is fucking on one.
And how many rushes down the wing?
Oh, dude, there was one so explosive.
There was one play where Josh Anderson picked it up at center ice, brought it back into the Canadian zone, skated behind the net, and went 200 feet the other way behind the other net.
Mm-hmm.
And then they lost it. He picked it back up at the blue line, kept it in the offense. Like, that is the best game of hockey. Maybe not definitely not statistically. Like, he didn't score a hat trick or anything. He got one goal. But that was the best game of hockey I think I've ever seen Anderson play, at least in a long time. And if he can do that, maybe not every night because that's tough to do, but if he can do that on a consistent basis, I don't care what the fucking analytic nerds of this – I like analytics, but you know, mm-hmm. the group I'm talking about on yeah. Twitter, the fucking kids my age thinking they're big shit, knowing everything about hockey. I don't care what they say. I don't care what analysts say. That is fucking amazing. And that's going to help. That's so worth the contract.
Right.
That is what you pay Josh Anderson to do. And if you think $5.5 million a year is too much, I think you're on crack. Because that just provided so much energy. And, you know, you'll see people mock that and say, oh, you don't pay money for energy and leadership.
Well, I would pay money for someone to keep it in the offensive zone.
You know what it tells me? You know what it tells me? Like, I'm not a boomer or an old head for hockey. I don't think you pay guys like Matt Martin anything more than $1 million. I don't think you have guys like Matt Martin or Ryan Reeves on your team. I really don't. But if you honestly believe that leadership and grit and hard work aren't something worthwhile in the sport, like something Josh Anderson provides, that tells me that you have not
smoking rocks.
Yeah, but, and I mean this in the most polite way possible, it tells me that you have not played a sport at any sort of competitive level in your entire life. Because when you've got a guy, and I don't care if he's scoring or how good he is, but especially when he is good or a leader or a guy that you're supposed to rely on, even if he's not producing, when he's going out there and he's giving everything, he's taking hits and he's laying his body on the line and he is just, you know, he's coming on the bench and he's spewing, like you can tell, like he's going to be coughing out blood later. He's given everything. You can't just as an athlete, as a human being, you can't not go out there and do the same thing. You just can't. It inspires you to go out there and play as hard as you fucking can. So I don't care what anyone says. If Josh Anderson, and I've criticized him for a long time, he can't pass. So if he can, you know, we've said how many times, Corey, if he could pass, he'd be one of the best players in the league. He can't pass, okay? And I'll criticize him for that. But don't try to take away from what he does provide, because when he's doing what he's doing last night, I'll pay all $5.5 million willingly to Josh Anderson, because that is exactly what this team needs right now, and it paid off. It, you know, everyone was working hard. Everyone was giving everything, and Montreal came away with their second shutout of the year and their third win.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people seem to forget, like, how integral he was in the playoffs last year that kept us alive. You know, some of those – I think it was, like, two nights where he scored the two goals back-to-back. But, I mean, it's kind of a cliche, but, you know, they said it last night, and it really was true. You know, he's I forgot which guy said it. But he was like, some nights, you know, the legs are just under you. And I mean,
I think it's Mike Johnson.
Just the play you were talking about. I mean, he literally took it 200 feet, looked for an offensive, you know, look for a play. It kind of falls apart, gets it back, and proceeds to continue to try, you know, to keep the momentum. Like Josh Anderson's speed last night, just his, it was unreal, you know. I think you're right, though, about, you know, look at Brendan Gallagher, you know, has kind of fallen a bit as of, you know, he's not the young Brendan Gallagher anymore. He's banged up. But you see someone like that, like, take, you know, Brendan Gallagher takes the body all fucking day long. And, you know, how do you not fight, you know, after that? But, you know, in Josh Anderson's case, Josh Anderson is, you know, the person fucking hauling ass to try to chase the puck, you know, to stop an icing or anything like that. This dude's given 110% to keep us in games. Like, how do you not battle with him? You know, how do you try? Oh, exactly. How do you not try to, you know, get to his level? And last night we saw that, you know, there was leaders in this room that were really on one last night, and everyone else's energy and just their, it almost like, you know, just their hockey poise, like, skyrocketed. And definitely, that's what we're supposed to see. You know, like, this team is capable of doing that. You know, we would like it more than, you know, 3-8, but this is, you know, this is a step in the right direction to see this team have a night like that. You know, we're not outscoring them, but we are just, we're just obliterating them offensively, like, just keeping it in the zone. A lot of takeaways last night. It was just one of the most well-played games I've seen, even including last year. We just played really, really well.
Yes, and of course, a lot of that spearheaded by the efforts of Jake Allen, who has played absolutely amazingly this season, outside of one bad game.
Yeah, despite all the bullshit.
Yeah, just has played like a superhero. He had 1 5-goal game. The guy still got a .914 save percentage. 2 shutouts on the year. Think about that. Montreal's won 3 games. 2 of them are Jake Allen shutouts. Like, this guy is, if he hasn't, you know, say what you want about the start the Canadians have had, Jake Allen's put them on his back. He leads the league in shots against. He's taken more shots against than any other goalie. And I think he's played phenomenally. I really do. if we didn't have Jake Allen, like, could you imagine, like, if Caden Primo was playing this year, it'd be a disaster, not only for him, but for the organization. It would be awful. Sam Montembeau is certainly not ready, not by any means, mm-hmm. at least through my opinion. If Jake Allen wasn't our guy, I don't think there's a lot of other backup goalies that could, I guess, take what he has. And that, I think that's really because he is, like I've said, I think he's a 1B. I think Jake Allen is a starter in this league, not a good, not an elite one, but I think he's really shown that, you know, even getting us the playoffs last year, like, we shouldn't be surprised that Jake Allen's doing this, because he just continues to do what he does, and that's stop pucks, and that's keep us in games. And if Montreal can start getting him some run support here, as much as I think that we should, and as much as I want that first overall pick and to get a lottery pick, like, I don't think Jake Allen's going to let that happen if he gets more than a goal a game from this team.
Right. No, I agree with you. And it's, you know, the Red Wings as of late, you know, they've kind of fallen a little bit off of the hot streak, but this team has been clicking, you know, especially to blank someone like Cider. We had mentioned him before we got on, you know, granted, you know, Dylan Larkin's out and Bertuzzi's out, but you know, this team hasn't been able, you know, no one's really been able to stop Moritz Cider at all, or Lucas Raymond. And, you know, this team that, I mean, we were not expecting to win came in, you know, not just because it's a shutout, but like really dominated this game. And, you know, I think this team can dominate Detroit, but as of late, we haven't been playing that way, you know? So I felt it was an amazingly refreshing game to watch. You know, I'm excited that I was able to tune into that one.
Yeah, most definitely. Also, some interesting comments from Jeff Petrie today. To quote, this is from Arpan Basso, quoting Jeff Petrie in regards to his play to start the season. There were times I felt like I needed to step up and try to be something else. For me, I don't think to add any other pressure. I need to play my game, the style that's worked for me in the past, and that's in regards to his difficult start. Said Petrie also added that he did add some pressure onto himself in order to compensate for the loss of Weber and Edmondson. He tried to be something he's not, but last couple of games feels like he's played better and is skating better. And honestly, I'd have to agree. I think Petrie has been better last few games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, still think there's a lot of improvement for Petrie if this team's going to be successful. He needs to start passing the puck more on the power play.
Yeah.
Especially to Cole Caulfield,
with Caulfield at the leftmost circle.
Yeah, but it makes sense that, you know, you look. I think we get kind of a jaded look because I think fans, even as podcast hosts, mm-hmm. but sports fans especially, we're all guilty of it. We have very, 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 very short memories. Like, we are so focused on what have you done for me recently.
Yeah.
And we forget what Jeff Petrie's done to start the season. By the way, you fucking jinxed him. And
it's not over. It's not over.
We're going to have to make a fucking audio clip of that, because if you guys remember that episode, Corey comes out here and says Petrie's going to win the fucking Norris, and the guy's got 1 point. Anyway,
it's not over. It's not
superstition over. We're only aside,
12 games in.
Superstition aside. I think it makes sense. You know, once he explains it, you take a look back and you go, wow, Jeff Petrie, like, he's tried to be Shea Weber, taking those bombs on the power play. He's really, I don't know if you know it, he hasn't joined the rush as much. Mm-hmm. He's really kind of tried to step back. He's been laying the body more.
Yeah.
He's tried to be Shea Weber, and he doesn't have Edmondson backing him up. You can probably imagine, and even, sorry to back myself up a little bit, even just talking about his presence off the ice. Do you remember, I think it was after the sixth game when they hadn't won yet, or going into before they won their first game, he got off the ice and he was pissed. Like, he was vocal.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Petrie, we've made fun of him for it in the past, is the most soft-spoken.
Yeah, he's a quiet, very to himself type of guy.
He's a 6'4" teddy bear with the softest, most mild voice like this in the world, right? And he was livid. And I think that's just him trying to pick up from Shea Weber's absence. And what we forget is that not only does this team feel it in, you know, the presence, but they also, you know, we look at it and we say, wow, they're bad without. The players feel that too. Mm-hmm. They know that they're missing something. So I think it makes total sense that Petrie struggled. I think it's very predictable, especially when you consider we don't have Joel Edmondson, who is our second best defender.
Yeah.
Say what you like. I think Kulak can challenge for him when he plays well. And I know there's crowds that think Kulak's our best defender. They're wrong, but you know, they're entitled to an opinion. Edmondson's our second best guy. He's our number two. That is indisputable. He's placed as our number two. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Petrie has looked like he's on an island sometimes, and he's played horribly. But, yeah, I just think it makes sense. You know, it totally makes sense. You can see that he's tried to be something he isn't. And if he can just pick up his game and continue to play his game, which is Jeff Petrie, the puck-moving defenseman, who has 30-plus assists every year for the last 4 years, then I think this team can win some hockey games. But I just thought it was interesting to see that perspective. I know I've been a little long-winded here.
No, I think you're right. This year is truly a learning curve for Jeff Petrie. He's never been the top man defensively. You know, he's never had to like truly carry the burden of being the leader, you know, and I love what he said in his comments. You know, it really, I love when every time he has, you know, comments, because he's one of the most likable, but like down to earth players in the league. Just happens to be, you know, like he happens to just be with us, but you can just really get a sense of his life. Like, you know, he's very, you know, he's very in his head. If he fucks up, he's going to take it so hard on himself. But, you know, for a player that's so calm and collected and very soft spoken, for him to come out of that comfort, you know, what makes Jeff Petrie so amazing, to try to be something bigger than himself, to unite this team and try to, you know, be the voice of reason with the likes of, you know, Danault gone, fucking Tuna gone, Weber gone, Carey Price out, you know.
Edmondson. Byron. That leadership decimated. Byron.
It's gone. And it's like Jeff Petrie and Brendan Gallagher. And as far as Jeff Petrie, you know, I just commend him for trying to take on more than he might be able to, just because he's more of a mental person, kind of like Drouin. Like, they need to just be allowed to play their game. They need they probably, you know, thrive with responsibility, but like to take on all of it, I think that was a bit too much for Jeff Petrie. But I don't see this being a failing thing. I can see him as like the leader of a team, but like this is his first shot at doing it, so like I can't be too critical on him for having such like a bit of a slow start.
I think I agree, but also disagree with you there. However, like,
okay,
you say it's his first shot as the number one, and I think we've both said for the last 2 years that Jeff Petrie's the number one defenseman on this team. I remember last year for a period of time, but the year before when Weber was out for like 30 games, Petrie steps up and he does it. Mm-hmm. We remember having this discussion with you. I can't remember when. It was a few months ago. Every time Weber goes down, Petrie would step up and he'd be that guy. I think the difference this time is that Weber's not coming back.
Yeah, that's literally was going to be my rebuttal to it was,
yeah,
like it's he can be the, like, you know, the, you know, the stand-in guy right now. They're knowing that it's coming back. He can step up to that, but to take on the entire responsibility, that's where I meant as far as the number one. I didn't mean like the number one yet, because I truly think he's the number one defenseman we have, even if Shea Weber's here. I meant like taking on the leadership role of like the captaincy. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they would have gave Jeff Petrie the C.
Well, and what I think the bigger part of it is that he's got to be the number one and the number two now. Mm-hmm. Where in previous years, Edmondson last year really stepped up and bore the load. I love Joel Edmondson. I think I'm a little higher on him than most people are. I love Joel
Edmondson. You weren't in the beginning. I love like how you have evolved to love Edmondson.
Oh, I despised him at the start, but he got, you know,
he got it done. He's phenomenal. Oh,
and before that, I'm going to get fucking clowned on for this. Ben Sherratt, really, a couple years ago, the guy shouldn't. Look, we know where I stand with him now, but Ben Sherratt really stepped up to the plate the year prior. And he wasn't, I'm not saying he was a long-term number two guy, but he was doing it. He was shutting guys down. He was playing good.
Yeah, and when we got him, I was like, dude, this might be one of the best acquisitions to date right now. Like,
oh, he was playing well. Like, and Petrie had, you know, Petrie didn't have to go out there and bear the load of all the defense, and that's the difference this year. I love David Savard with Romanov. I think he's good, does good for Romanov. But outside of David Savard, there are no defensive defensemen on this team. Joel Edmondson is that guy. Ben Sherratt is, you could call him a defensive defenseman, but there's not a lot of defense being played. There's a lot of chasing when he's on the ice. So he's not much help. I love Sammy Niku. I love Chris Weidman. They don't have, you know, you can say, yeah, you do. I think I do agree that you can do a lot of defending when you have the puck. When you're transitioning and you're not letting them attack you, you can do a lot of defending. Those guys on the, it's the penalty kill, right? Like, they're not great for that. I think Kulak is, he's okay at it. Like, I think he's pretty average at it. I think what Kulak does, how Kulak succeeds in his defending is that he doesn't let the opposition have the puck a lot, which is its own, like, I love Brett Kulak. I think he could really truly develop into a number two defenseman on a team. Not just this team, I think a few teams in this league. I think he just needs the opportunity. But my point being, you're not always going to be able to avoid defending. Sometimes you're going to get boxed in your zone, and sometimes you're going to have to kill the penalty. David Savard, I think, is a third pairing guy, a third number three defenseman in terms of killing penalties. Jeff Petrie's alone there. Like, he has to bear that load by himself. And he knows if he messes up, there's no one coming to help him. And I think that's honestly where Montreal misses Weber the most, because when his offense wasn't clicking, or when he was injured, or when he was slow footed, say what you want, he cleared guys out from in front of the net, and he laid his body on the line. And he, like, the defensive presence of Shea Weber, I don't think ever wavered. And
yeah,
that I think has what's really messed with Petrie, is not having Edmondson and Weber to kind of take some of those difficult minutes away from him so that he can get those offensive zone starts and he can worry about bringing the puck up the ice.
Just a quick update on Edmondson. He joined the team back a couple of days ago, but he's had a setback. They're saying that he's going to be about 10 to 14 days. So roughly more 2 weeks until he comes back to the team. Also, another update, Norlander has been cleared for full contact. He got hurt during training camp. So there's a chance he'll see some action this year too. So, but Edmondson, another 2 weeks out, but it's going to go by quick, hopefully.
Yeah.
And this was 2 days ago. So, yeah.
Just some other hockey news regarding Colorado, who've kind of become my second favorite team for a few years now. Just want to touch on them quickly. They play tonight. They're missing Makar Rantanen, Burakovsky, Devon Taves, Valeri Nichushkin, and Pavel Francouz. And I want to point this out because you've probably seen me tweet about it if you follow me on Twitter. Corey, I know you've probably seen it. Fucking Curtis McDermott is playing for the Colorado Avalanche. And this is a team that has Jack Johnson on their blue line. Okay. And we've notoriously clowned on Jack Johnson. Curtis McDermott is the worst defenseman I've ever seen in my entire life. And if you honestly, it's fucking, if you're not an Avalanche fan, it's fucking hilarious. If you have the capability to check the Avalanche lineup, I plead with you. If you're a hockey fan, if you're a Habs fan, I don't care. Or if you're just, you just want to see chaos, watch one shift of Curtis McDermott on the ice. There is almost always a scoring chance. Like, I've never seen an NHL player who is that bad at hockey. And if you, like, go on Twitter when the Avs are playing, just look up McDermott, and you'll just see this chaos. Like, if you think Ben Chiarot has it bad playing for the Montreal Canadiens, I cannot, like, stress to you how much Avs fans hate Curtis McDermott. My best friend is an Avs fan. And when I was back home, we did a doubleheader. Avs played at 8, Habs played at 10. I haven't seen him that lit. Like, Curtis McDermott would touch the puck, and he'd fucking clench his fist. Even if Curtis McDermott made a good pass, he's like, fucking McDermott, he got lucky. Like, they fucking hate him. It's hilarious. And the other thing, because I'm not just mentioning how shit a player is, but they have a player, Jason McDonald. He's 26, I believe. He's been up and down in the AHL a bunch. Really cool
Jacob player. Jacob McDonald.
Is it Jacob McDonald?
Sorry. Yeah, he's playing on the fourth line tonight with Jason Manga and Kiefer Sherwood.
Sorry, that's why I said Jason, because of but Jacob McDonald is a defenseman slash forward. And he's like a Brent Burns. Oh, like a legit, like, it's not like he plays forward once in a while or D once in a while. I think he split his games in the AHL last year. He is a primary defenseman.
Like that.
Oh, it's so cool. I think he was drafted as a defenseman. He's a primary, defenseman is first position, but he's playing on the fourth line for the Avs. So it'll be too late by the time this episode's out. But if he's still in the lineup, check it out. I just think it's a really cool thing to see happen. Like, if you're a hockey nerd, it's cool to watch Jacob McDonald play. It's anytime there's a defenseman playing forward, I think it's so cool. Even last night when Galley went out and Drouin was also out, who we'll give an update to after this. I was just hoping Sammy Nykut or Chris Weidman got up on the forwards. I just love it. I think it's so cool to watch players play out of position.
Right.
But if you can watch Curtis McDermott, fucking do it, Corey. It's hilarious.
I'll check the game out. I need something to watch while I edit. But I love guys that are defensemen and also forwards. Like that 2016 year when San Jose went on that fucking run to the cup, and they just let Brent Burns, like, they were just like, we're gonna throw you as a forward, you know. And he just fucking ate that shit up. I was like, dude, this is like one of the coolest things I've ever seen in hockey is to give, you know, the defenseman the reins to, okay, we have an injury, you know, there's an opportunity to call up a defenseman if you want to take a right wing position. And he was fucking like unstoppable. I love shit like that. It's like, I think it's called Iron Man football. When you can do that in, you know, little leagues all the way to college, I think, where you can play defensive and offensive.
I
think it's sick as fuck.
Brent Burns is an interesting guy because I think he was traded to Minnesota or to San Jose from Minnesota as a forward.
Yeah. He was drafted, I believe, a right wing.
Well, like, he played in the NHL for years as a forward and then made the transition and put up more points as a defenseman. Same with Dustin Byfuglien.
Yeah.
That guy was a forward who, I don't even know what were his point total. I know, like, for the entire dynasty in Chicago, he was a forward, was he not?
I really didn't pay that much attention to it, if I'm being honest.
I'm pretty sure he was a forward the whole time he played in Chicago, too. Like, really, I agree with you. It's really cool to watch players like that who are just interchangeable, and then for some reason you make that that change defense. And I don't know if it's whether you see the ice better or you have more vision, or you have more opportunities. I don't know what it is. They just really take off on the back end. But yeah, so Jacob McDonald, Curtis McDermott, check them out. One of them's a good story. One of them is so bad, it's funny. But moving on to, unless you have anything to add.
Oh, I just, we just have an ad read by our friends over at DraftKings. NFL fans hungry for a big win this week? DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, has you covered. New customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game. And if they do, you win $200 in free bets. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Anyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings daily fantasy sports contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their games and win $200 in free bets if they win. You win with promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only. New customers only, minimum $5 deposit, a $1 wager required. One per customer, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Well, I can tell you one thing. If you are going to bet on DraftKings, which you 100% should, do not ever bet on the fucking Miami Dolphins to win, because oh my god,
I don't know if it's a home game this year, but I saw we do play the Dolphins, and I hope it's a home game because I've really never seen the Dolphins in person.
Fucking hell, why would you want to? 1-7,
but it's your fucking, it's your favorite team, you know. So see what it's like.
It is. It's just. I thought it was Tua time. Got injured. The team sucks. Defense continues to be awesome, but our offense is still shit. We have one of the best tight ends in the league. Can't get anything done. Has some of the best. It's just a shit show. yeah, the only thing that makes me feel better about being a Habs fan when we've been losing is that knowing that being a Dolphins fan is more painful. Thought we were gonna get Deshaun Watson, and then all that bullshit with him happened. It's endless pain being a Miami Dolphins fan. Like, I think it's almost as bad as being a Jets fan now. So yeah, if you're gonna draft on DraftKings, whoever's playing the Dolphins, just put a bunch of money on them, and that's my betting advice. Don't actually take it, but they're fucking horrible.
Jesus. But you had an update on Drew Wayne, right?
Yeah, I did. So Jonathan Drouin has been confirmed by the medical staff, and by Josh Anderson made a comment saying he came back from the hospital. He was in the locker room after the game.
Mm-hmm.
No concussion as far as they know. They did the testing. They'll reevaluate him on Thursday, which will be when you guys listen to this. So he should be a game time decision. Ducharme wasn't too concerned, said everything should probably be okay. So we'll probably see Jonathan Drouin hopefully back in the lineup. If not, he might miss one game. He'll be back. So that's good to hear, especially the way he's been playing. He's been playing great for the Habs, putting up big points, leading the team up until last night when quietly Nick Suzuki took the lead. And, you know, we were rapping on him, shitting on him a lot, but he's really stepped it up these last few games. It'll be interesting to see how he does on Thursday when we play. Who the fuck do we play? I believe... Let's see. Corey, I have no clue who we play.
I got you, buddy.
it is the Islanders. Oh, fuck. That'll be fun. So, should be exciting to hopefully see if – I was going to say if Suzuki can continue with the offense.
I'm going to go see Barry.
Barry?
Barry Trotz and the boys.
Not a lot of offense to be had, I'll assume. Islanders aren't off to a great start either, though, are they?
I don't think so. I think they're struggling a little bit, but I have nothing but faith in their fucking coach to turn it around.
Oh, they'll be fine. I'm not going to worry about them one bit. Yeah, Islanders are 3-5. No, how many? What are they?
Islanders
three and four to start the season. Mm-hmm. they'll pick it up. They always do. Yeah, I was gonna say hopefully we can get some offense, but when you're playing the Islanders, if you get two goals, you're lucky.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully Drouin's back in the lineup. We'll see what happens. Honestly, I'm pretty optimistic after seeing last game that Montreal is going to have a good game against the Islanders, though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you. I have a good feeling. I think the guys kind of took some inspiration from that win. If Jake Allen can continue to play the way he has, I think Montreal is going to have a chance in a lot of games this year. And like I said, if Montreal can do the Ottawa Senators approach and, you know, lose pretty much every single game, but score a bunch of goals, I'll be pretty darn happy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a bit of unity. There was a spark in that game that I don't think it was just a one-time thing. I know, you know, obviously there was a bit of movement with the team as far as, you know, like Caulfield getting sent down. But I don't think that it can something like they just look too united, too glued together to really drop the ball in the next game. I mean, they might, you know, like I can see a loss just because it's the Islanders. It's going to be a tough battling game. But as far as like the connection, I think we have a solid chance at winning it. Just because it's been, if it seems like the pieces are starting to come together.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think, like I said, this team isn't as bad as they were to start the season. They're no cup contenders. But if Montreal can have some development through Suzuki, who's now back on pace for 60 points, Suzuki can get 60 points, that'll be awesome.
Absolutely. I think they would be dumb not to play Pezzetta next game. Bring that fire.
I agree.
To a team like the Islanders could be a big difference maker in a win or loss situation. Dude, I actually just found something very interesting. I know it's a little off, but we were talking about Brent Burns. Do you know who converted Brent Burns to play defense?
Was it? And what team was he on?
It was Minnesota. Minnesota's head coach. You know who it was at the time?
Minnesota. What year was it?
I want to say 2003. So
2000.
He got drafted, and he immediately got brought up.
It was 2003. He got converted to forward.
No, he got converted to defenseman.
I thought he played as a forward in the league.
Yeah, he did, and Lemaire told, you know.
Oh, Jacques Lemaire, really?
Yeah. Oh, LOL, I just gave it away. Eight-time fucking Stanley Cup champion, Montreal Canadiens, Jacques Lemaire. He might have played a couple of games as a right wing, but I believe his first game with the Wild was as a defenseman.
Oh, okay.
Like,
see, I thought he played a couple seasons as a forward. So I guess I must have smoked some crack or something before.
Well, I know his, like it says when, you know, his, like, where am I at? Playing with like the Brampton Battalion. He was a right winger, you know, so he, I guess just to get him in the game, because it says that once he adapted his role as a defenseman, he earned his regular spot with the Wild.
He was a high pick too, first round.
He was 20th overall. Yeah, wore like, I don't even think he wore a suit, son. Like, like Brent Burns came into the league as the most unique fucking person.
He's definitely unique. That'll give him. We've kind of run the clock here, haven't we?
Yeah, a bit.
What are we at right now?
Let's see. We are at, Jesus, I think we're at like an hour.
Well, I think that'll be good to wrap things up for today. Unless you got anything else to add, because we've talked an awful lot for one game of news.
No. Yeah, we did. We were just on a roll tonight. No, I'm fine with ending it here. I think we got our points across that we wanted to. And I think we should roll out.
All right. Well, If that's everything for today, just want to say thank you so much, guys, for coming in, listening to us on whatever platform that is. If you have any spare time, I highly recommend you check out some of the other podcasts on the Hockey Podcast Network. Or if you're a big football guy, maybe you're a Miami Dolphins fan. I'm sorry if you are. You could check out the Pigskin Podcast Network, which is all NFL, all football, all the time. So highly recommend you check out some of those podcasts. But once again, thank you guys for listening. We'll work to keep you guys updated, keep pumping out the episodes. And we have some exciting content, hopefully planned for the new year. So it's November. It's a few months away, but we're excited to hopefully announce that, talk about it if it works out. Corey, do you have anything to add before I take us out?
Leave us a message at www.speakpipe.com/HabsNightly. That's it.
Yeah, please do. We haven't gotten any since our last one from
Jason. Fucking Bent.
Awesome listener, Jason. Hope you're out there listening. So if we can get any more, we'd appreciate that. We love interacting with you guys, whether that's on the SpeakPipe or through social media. So without further ado, you guys have a wonderful day. Hopefully we take a big win against the Islanders tonight. If that's it, that'll be all.
All right, folks. This has been Habs Nightly. Y'all have a blessed evening. We'll talk to y'all soon.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.